My name's Chris Stock, and I also don't have slides for the first time ever in my entire career. And that's really weird.
Isn't it?
And I'd like to introduce myself to Sarah.
It's because we've
talked many times over email, but never met each other in person until just now.
I know, I love it.
Because we both work for the VA. Anyway, I've spent nearly 30 years working in substance abuse, and it's a little odd because until maybe 10 years ago, I didn't feel like I was really part of CPNP and the mental health community. And I think colleagues on the other side of the fence often felt the same way. I've taught pharmacy students, social work students, physician assistant students, medical students, nursing students before, and there always seemed to be this schism between people with your usual psychiatric disorders of depression, anxiety disorders, bipolar, and schizophrenia, and those substance abuse people. But what we know now, what people have learned over the last 30 years, is that both of those sides of the fence cross over, and a lot of us have done a lot of educational work and advocacy work to take down that fence. So part of what I have had to do in my career is I've had to continue learning. I don't think there's been a year that's gone by that I haven't gotten some new certification or some new training or enrolled in some course because I didn't know enough. So the major things were when I left pharmacy school, and was my interest in substance abuse actually led me to pharmacy school. And after all of those years of pharmacy school, I realized that I never had a course on substance abuse kind of stuff. So I took my own courses. I attended the summer school, the Utah School on Alcoholism and Other Drug Dependencies. I graduated from the University of Utah, but that wasn't part of my core curriculum in pharmacy school. It was separate. By the way, that school has been taken over for pharmacists and pharmacy students by APHA and will be held this summer in Salt Lake City, but you have to go to APHA to find information about it and register for it. So I'd encourage you to do that. Unless you are coming from one of the exceptional schools that includes education and information and training about substance use disorders in your curriculum. I tell you that most schools don't, including the University of Utah, even though they've had that summer school all the time. So that was one of the first things that I did. And then as I started my practice career, I realized I still didn't quite know enough about how to interact with people, about who they were and what they were about. So I took a course offered by the Johnson Institute in Minnesota on family dynamics and intervention techniques. Did lots of other training along the way, but during my career, I also didn't learn enough physical assessment skills when I was in pharmacy school or in my first year of residency training. So I attended two courses to learn more physical assessment skills, because I was put in a role where I had direct patient care, and I had to examine people to the extent that I knew whether they needed to be referred to the emergency room or whether they were safe to remain in the ambulatory withdrawal management clinic. Another big thing that I have been involved in doing a lot over the years is helping people understand and interpret urine drug screens. And I didn't learn enough about that when I was in pharmacy school or in residency training, so I took a course offered by the American Society of Addiction Medicine called Medical Review Officer Training. And that was my initiation into really understanding what urine drug testing is and how it works and why there are so many false positives and so many more false negatives. Another part of my practice over the past 30 years has been involved in clinical trials research. So I had to get trained on how to do clinical trials research because the information that I received when I was in pharmacy school about how to understand articles when you read them and statistics didn't prepare me for actually being a principal investigator for an ongoing randomized clinical trial. So at that time, the time that I did that, the VA offers a course in clinical trials research. So anyway, that's just a sampling of things that I've had to do all of the time for self-education and self-improvement, improving my knowledge and improving my skills. So the clinical practice things that I've done over the years, I managed the ambulatory withdrawal management clinic at our VA for a number of years. Because we didn't have any psychiatrists at that time who had any interest in this substance abuse population. So using a collaborative practice agreement, they said, Chris, you can manage those patients. You have more experience and interest in it than any of the rest of us do. And I worked a lot with people in our emergency room, and they said, Chris, we don't understand how you can work with these people. And I said, well, I can work with these individuals who happen to have a substance use disorder because I have the luxury of getting to see them every single day and watch them improving their lives. You get to see them for a few hours when they are at their absolute worst and they're sometimes using inappropriate language and making demands and swearing at you because they're intoxicated and all you want to do is get them out of your emergency room. So. And I've had patients over the years who go back to the emergency room doctors and back to the emergency room nurses to make amends and apologize for how obnoxious they were that night that they came into the emergency room. But they still don't get that the people working in emergency rooms don't often get that kind of feedback from the people that they're involved treating. Another role that I have had is in our inpatient psychiatric consult service. So what I learned when I started doing that actually as part of my practice in managing the ambulatory withdrawal management clinic. And that was we got a lot of people who were coming out of a very brief hospital stay to like finish out their benzodiazepine taper or finish out their clonidine reduction until they got in to see one of the counselors, until they got enrolled in our substance use disorder treatment program. And so they'd get referred to me, and I thought, well, maybe if I caught them before they were discharged from the hospital. So I used to go over and work with the nursing staff, identify who those patients were who were likely to be discharged. Then I realized that the psychiatric consult service was seeing many of them, so I started working with them. And that broadened because this inpatient psychiatric consult service in most facilities, again, sees people who are out of their element, like in primary care. But it turns out that's where many people are identified who have delirium, dementia, schizophrenia that's not well controlled, bipolar disorder that's not well controlled, certainly a lot of substance use disorders that are, they're in the hospital because they're having medical problems related to their primary psychiatric or mental health disorder. So I have worked with the inpatient psychiatric consult service managing all those patients with delirium and dementia and detox-related issues. Then we have it's not technically inpatient, but it's called a SARTEP, a Substance Abuse Recovery something or other.
Treatment Program.
We have too many acronyms in the VA, the way a lot of organizations do. But this is a 4 to 8 week substance use disorder residential treatment program. And in that program offer groups on medication compliance and adherence, on overdose prevention and overdose treatment. We distribute naloxone kits to all of the patients who are coming through our substance use disorder residential treatment program who are at risk for overdose when they're discharged. And then, as I mentioned, kind of the fourth arm of what I do is clinical trials research. And more and more and more research and research administration has kind of taken over and consumed what I do. But I think a common theme that all of us have, and I realize that as the other speakers were presenting, something that we all end up doing but didn't ever have any kind of education and training in is advocacy. I don't know if there's a course in how to advocate for yourself, for your patients, for your practice, for your institution, organization, for a new law. But I've done all of those things in my career, but never took a course on how to be an advocate for what's needed, again, for yourself, for your professional needs, for your patients, what your institution or organization needs. But if someone had a workshop or a symposium or a training program like that, I would sign up for it and pay money to take it. Resources that are available to you, and I'll just tell you about these because now I'm in my advocacy role. There is a table out here that says PCSSO and PCSSMAT. Those are two education resources and training programs that CPNP is partnered with. And the PCSSMAT is focused on medication-assisted treatments for opiate dependence primarily. And I'll just step back a second and talk about advocacy and academic detailing. When I first started in practice, there were three medications that were used for the treatment of substance use disorders. There was nicotine replacement for tobacco cessation. There was antabuse for people with alcohol dependence or alcohol use disorder. And there was methadone for people with opiate use disorder. Now there are many more medications than that. However, in the case of alcohol use disorder, they are used by almost no one. And so we need to do academic detailing to teach people what are the benefits and how can those be measured with the tangible benefits for people and for organizations. So PCSSMAT and PCSSO do that and provide education and training resources. And CPNP has a group of us over the past 6 or 8 months has put together and developed materials related to naloxone access for overdose prevention. And so we have a lot of these. They're a trifold brochure that are out at a table. If you at your school or within your community or state need information about naloxone access, pick up one of these brochures. You can also get them online on the CPNP website and print them. But this has information that all of us have found useful over the years for naloxone access. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
All right, everybody. I just wanted to take the opportunity on behalf of all of us to thank our panelists for their wonderful presentations. This is a huge fountain of knowledge that goes with all of those areas of expertise, and they made it all in 13 minutes apiece, which is pretty amazing. So that's pretty great. Give them a round of applause, and then we're actually, I know. And they didn't even talk that fast, so I don't know how they did it. So, very exciting what's up next. Save your questions, save your thoughts, save your burning desires to know something, because we're going to have a 15-minute break, and we'll come back at 3:15 for a roundtable session where we will have people, some of these panelists up here, in addition to other experts in the same four specialty areas that are going to spend time talking to you about your questions and going over a little bit more information. So how this is going to work is we'll have four different tables set up, and we'll have two tracks because we have an amazing student turnout this year. We have about 80 students in attendance at the meeting. We have about 70 of you here in this room. Thank you so much for coming. So when you come back in,